So thank you for coming. Yeah, I wanted to really highlight this coalition that we've been building in Maricopa County to partner with all of these different sectors that are seemingly required to do very similar activities to really move towards, one, community and relationship building, and then two, eventually trying to move those activities towards health improvement activities in a more collective way. So I'm going to go over a little bit of what set the stage for this collaboration through the different requirements, some of which have been touched on earlier, and then go through how we approached our process previously and then what plans we've done since then to move forward with this collaboration. So the first piece I'm going to talk about is the IRS requirements for 501c3, which are nonprofit hospitals. This came out under the Affordable Care Act in 2010, which included a lot of charity care and benefit activities, but then included this last provision, which was requiring these facilities to conduct community health needs assessments and then adopt implementation strategies at least once every 3 years. And then those requirements became effective starting in 2012. And then there's a whole list of what exactly they're required to do to meet that one activity. So for their IRS filings, the facilities are required to include what's called a Form 990. I've learned so much more about IRS tax code than I ever thought I would. And that Form 990 can be filed by the hospital system as a whole, yet there's a subpart of the 990 called the Schedule H that requires each facility to file a subpart B, which includes all the details of the community health needs assessment, and that has to be facility-based. Oh my gosh, this is really small type. So the Schedule B has all of these details as check marks on their form. So each facility's report has to meet each of these criteria. They have to be able to check off this activity that they included this within their needs assessment process. So it has to include a definition of the community, the demographics, the existing resources within the community, how they actually obtained all the data that they include in their report, the significant health needs of the community, primary chronic disease needs and other health issues, the process that they use for identifying all those priorities, the process for consulting with persons representing the community's interest, as well as information gaps that might limit the report. It also includes this very specific provision that they must have consulted with someone with special knowledge or expertise in public health, and then they must describe how they did that. And then they also are allowed to collaborate on these facilities if each facility is actively engaged in that process and each board adopts their needs assessment. So all of this is to show you how complicated these hospitals were, how complicated the situation was that these hospitals were faced with. And then also, at the same time, there are the HRSA requirements for the FQHCs that they fund, requiring that they do a needs assessment to prove that there's a need in their community at which they will meet, and then they must show continuing need every time they have to reapply for services. There's less regulations, there's not 10 pages like there is for the other one, but it's still a need that these FQHCs have to prove that they're still meeting some sort of community need. So then also at the same time, we were going through accreditation. And so FAB Standard 1.1 requires that state or local or tribal health departments lead or participate in a collaborative process. So really there's a lot of subparts on this that ask you, how did you engage your hospital partners? How did you engage your community partners? How did you engage underserved populations? And so there's a lot of areas that overlap between all of these. So our previous process, we began in 2011 in anticipation of applying for accreditation. We used the MAP process, which is a NATO-supported framework for mobilizing these partnerships. It's really a community-driven collaborative process, which was one of the most attractive things about it for us. Within that process, there's specifically an EPI data review board, both internal and external, that really goes through your community-level indicators to determine those priorities of health needs. We also included community surveys, focus groups, key stakeholder surveys, and then we did a series of community meetings to help us with that prioritization process. So So at the end of our process, we came out with a countywide needs assessment report, and then the following year began to develop our community health improvement plan based on those findings. So within that, we created a health improvement partnership, which we call HIPMC, to house and monitor that community health improvement plan. So that's the ongoing kind of assessment and monitoring phase of this process. And it really was a multi-sector collaborative aimed towards that first piece I mentioned, which was collective impact. And through this process, both of developing the priorities as well as developing the HIPMC, we had a lot of hospital partners on board, we had a lot of FQHC representatives on board, and that really allowed us to kind of see at the same time that we were struggling with our needs assessment, what they were also at the same time struggling with. And also at this time, many of these guidelines were changing pretty much, it seems like, every 2 or 3 months. So we really got kind of an inside view through this collaborative at what they were struggling with. So based on that, we found that there really were a lot of needs from our hospital partners. They were really struggling, especially with the first piece, which was that these community needs assessments need to be community-wide, not just hospital-wide or patient-wide, which is what they were used to doing. So they were used to looking at their own populations, but not the community as a whole. They were also having a lot of data access issues. They weren't sure where to go, how to get information, how to interpret that information, how to identify their needs. And then they also were really struggling with how to systematically prioritize what those health issues were and how they wanted to begin to address them with their implementation plans. They also, it seems like maybe a week before their reports were due, they were sending them to our health director for his, quote, public health expert opinion with almost no context. And it just wasn't a good situation for any of us. And then there were some pieces missing a lot of times where, again, because they were so focused on their population, we were really missing the population without access to healthcare. So in addition to all of those issues, many of the facilities decided to pay contractors or consultants to do this for them, and it was a very expensive process for something that ended up mostly using our data to begin with. So, again, during the HIPMC process, we were hoping that it would develop into a collective impact collaborative, so we assisted them with their implementation plans if they wanted to align with our county CHIP using SMART objectives and identifying evidence-based practices to reach those goals, and we found that both of those were huge needs with our partners. So again, we identified those as service needs. We really were concerned about the duplication of efforts and that really maybe some of these facilities were being charged for activities that were basically what we had already provided publicly to these facilities on our website or in other venues. And then we really saw an opportunity to benefit our community by really aligning these processes, making sure that all these different organizations in the community had a voice in a really consolidated process, and we weren't missing some of these at-risk populations. And additionally, ourselves, we needed sustained funding for our future needs assessments. So previously, we had conducted that needs assessment that I just described in our Office of Performance Improvement, which was funded by two grants, one the CDC National Performance Improvement Initiative and another through our State Health Department CDC REACH grant. So neither of those was really sustainable, so we needed to find a model that would allow us to meet not only our public health duty, but also our accreditation requirements. So we decided that for this collaborative process, as we were kind of brainstorming what we wanted it to look like, we decided to house it in epidemiology because of the real data-intense nature of it, as well as when we were looking at some of the struggles that our community partners were having, a lot of them were around data access and interpretation, and so it kind of made just a nice fit for us to do it in epidemiology. So when we were setting up our plan, some of our critical pieces to take into account was that we needed to meet the 3-year cycle for all of our hospitals. We needed to make sure that we were meeting all of those IRS content requirements. And then for our own purposes, we needed to meet our accreditation requirements. And again, that element of sustainability. So from a practical standpoint, to make sure that we could meet all of those on an ongoing basis, we needed to develop the plan that allowed us to have some sort of yearly fee over a fixed price contract, because it would allow us to create permanent positions within our health department. It would also reduce some of the paperwork that goes along with being part of the county government and having funds that transfer between years. And there was just a lot more complication if we received one lump sum of money at one point in time. Again, we thought that it would promote sustainability with our partners because they could simply enter a recurring fee on their budget, and then hopefully we wouldn't have to have this discussion with them again because it would just be something that they get used to paying. So then internally, we had to work with our county government to establish a fee fund, which is something epidemiology had never done. So that was kind of a frame shift for us and our managers mentally. And then we had to get used to invoicing, which again is something that epidemiologists have very rarely ever done. So when we were developing our proposal, we outlined our three-year cycle with, again, because we wanted to keep it sustainable, activities broken up across all those 3 years. One, so that we would have enough time to complete these activities in a really responsible way, but also we could have yearly deliverables tied to those contracts so that our funders were getting a good sense of what they were getting for their money. We included within that focus groups and community surveys. So the first thing we did was develop kind of our ideal platinum level plan, which had every single element that you would ever want in your best needs assessment you've ever done. And basically the budget was too much for that. Our feedback from a lot of our providers was that it was just way too expensive for them to get approval for. So we stripped down that budget to the necessary components only. We had originally built in BRFSS survey expansion to get sub-county level estimates of those behavioral indicators. We ended up finding outside funding through a state foundation for that. So we were still able to include it, but we were able to find supplemental funding for it. We removed health indicator dashboards, and instead the state health department picked up the tab for that. And we had to remove several personnel. We had originally wanted a full-time epidemiologist to assist with this, and we only were able to keep the coordinator position. So again, based on those new activities, we created a standard fee based on the facilities that must file reports. And this was a really long debate about how do we set this up in an equitable fashion, because we were including FQHCs, which are considered a system under the way HRSA funds them, and many of the ones in the Phoenix area have 5 to 10 locations. And so something that was $50,000 to $100,000 would be out of reach for them, but maybe not so much so for the hospital systems. We also used an all-or-none approach for the facilities. So if you have a hospital system, you couldn't choose to participate for 5, but not for the other 5. And then in order to really market this activity with our partners, we created talking points and a slide set for those discussions. So within the business plan, we highlighted the in-kind services that we would contribute. So we included our staff time that was going to be dedicated to this activity, a lot of the equipment and facilities we were going to have access to, software support, all of that we built in to show that it wasn't just the community funding this, that we were really bought into the process, that we had allocated time to this, that we had upper-level management buy-in, and that this really was a priority for our health department. One of the things that I mentioned before that really came out of one of the struggles for the hospital systems the first round was that they didn't have direct access to the right public health experts, either for assistance with data indicators or to meet that like final requirement of having review with public health experts. And so we definitely built in a lot of private time for each of these facilities with our health director to discuss whatever priorities they wanted, so they could bring up whether they wanted the needs assessment input or just his ear to talk about another issue within their community or population. And that really was a very high selling point for a lot of our participants. We also really highlighted with a very concrete example some community network events that we had held, some successful projects we'd had related to community engagement, because one of the other pieces we heard back from our facilities was when they tried to do community surveys, their response rate was really low, or it was only the people directly in their clinic, and so they really weren't able to get a lot of diffusion into their community, and that was something that we can offer. Again, we talked a lot about data-related services, so a lot of, especially the FQHCs, apply for grants on a routine basis, and we built in support to help them whenever they have one of these needs, whether it's grant monitoring, whether it's grant applications, that they can submit data requests on an ongoing basis, even outside of the needs assessment, and we can help them with that. And again, we had some specialty services like mapping, statistical analysis, and some additional ones that were particularly attractive. So when it came time to recruit people, we did a little bit of informal outreach. Again, like I said, we kind of had this original plan and sent it out to a few key stakeholders, got some feedback that it wasn't quite realistic, so we pared that down. And so then we went out to all of our facilities and mostly approached community benefit programs as well as marketing and strategic planning offices to try and find the right people to connect with for this project. And then once we felt like we had a really good list of who those people were, we started our formal outreach process. So our health director emailed each contact person personally and then followed up with several phone calls expressing his support for this project, as well as setting up time that they could meet with him one-on-one to discuss any questions or concerns that they had. We also held a group in-person meeting for all of the people we had approached about this, to have them have time to see that everyone else was at the table, that there were people engaged in the process, and that this was something that the community was interested in, hopefully to kind of, I guess, pressure them a little bit into participating. And then we did follow up with facility-specific meetings. Some people had really, really specific questions that they wanted to make sure were addressed in the contracts, and so we definitely accommodated that. So some of the things that I think were really successful about our recruitment was that through the last needs assessment as well as the HIPMC process, we had had really good relationships with a lot of these staff. And one of the things that we also found to be a success is if the person you approach is actually the person who can make money decisions. So sometimes you had lower level staff who thought this was a great idea, but have no ability to make any financial decisions. And so making sure that you're talking to the right people through those informal outreach that we did at the beginning was really beneficial to us later on. And then again, I guess leveraging community partnerships to encourage participation is a very PC way of saying peer pressure. So we had a lot of other hospitals who had agreed to participate reach out also to the other hospitals that had either been a little bit reticent or were a little concerned about the partnership or the collaborative. Some of the challenges, again, it was a success in my earlier part, but it was sometimes hard to reach the right person who actually had the money-making decisions. We had a few organizations in the community that were making really significant changes, including one hospital system that was going through a merger. And then we really had this anxiety that what would we do if only a certain number of facilities decided to commit to the process, because we had already kind of fixed the fee that we were going to be charging. And so the way we addressed that was we required organizations to sign non-binding letters of commitment. So we created those and drafted those through our grants and contracts office with legal review, and we required that they have executive level sign-off within their organization before submitting it, so that we knew that there was the money behind it and there was the executive level support. And then when we developed our contracts, we developed them for all 3 years of the project. Again, it was on an annual cycle for invoice and billing, and then we built in that it was renewable for up to 3 cycles. And the reason we did that was so that then we didn't have to go to our board of supervisors every time. We could just submit it as a renewal, and then they could do the same thing. So only 3 organizations actually submitted their letter of commitment by the original deadline. So as a result of that, we had to do another round of in-person meetings with those facilities that hadn't submitted their letter of commitment. We eventually had 16 of our 22 nonprofit hospitals participate in the final project. So again, one of those hospital systems was going through a merger and didn't think it was the right time to participate. And then we just had one facility that basically refused all of our contact. So we're not giving up, though. And then we eventually had 4 out of 10 FQHCs within our area commit to participating. And those FQHCs, again, represent multiple facilities, and the 4 that are participating are the largest in our community. So this was overall timeline. It took us about 1.5 years to get all the contracts submitted from the concept development stage. Currently, We have hired our coordinator. We also have hired our contract analyst. So again, we weren't able to create the full-time epidemiologist position we had originally wanted. And so we're going to do those through contracts. We are currently establishing our advisory board for this process, and it will be under the auspices of our Health Improvement Partnership. We also have been in the process of developing content and schedule for our in-person meetings with our funders. One of the things we really learned after our first kickoff meeting with them was that they weren't so interested in the process of what we were doing and why we were doing it. They really wanted opportunities to network with each other, basically. So we're really getting away from what I thought they were interested in, which was numbers, facts, figures on their contract and how we're spending their money, and really setting up more time for them to do peer learning amongst the community benefit programs or against the amongst the contracts programs, so they can really see what activities each of them is doing in the community. And then one of the big challenges is making sure that we're meeting their required cycles. So they could have filed as early as 2011, and so then many of them are on different schedules. So during this first phase of the 3 years, we're having to meet their current deadlines as well as at the end of the cycle get them to resubmit so that then at that time we would all be on the same 3-year cycle. Okay. Any questions?
Do you have a comfort level sharing with us what amount these facilities were contributing? I guess in my own mind, I'm feeling like the whole Affordable Care Act was designed to reduce the burden of charity care so that more of their patients were coming with reimbursement attached to them, and such that they really, you know, were expected then to actually do more not-for-profit work like this, as opposed to saying our not-for-profit work is giving charity care to people.
Yeah.
So it almost seems like they were niggling you on that, and maybe, you know, it's like one FTE for all of Maricopa County.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get it. It seemed like
We ended up with a fee that was $10,000 per hospital or $10,000 per FQHC system. And that ended up totaling around $200,000 for the participants in our system. I mentioned to you earlier, we could have created all the FTEs we wanted, but then we would have sacrificed the focus group administration or some of the survey data collection, and so we chose not to do that. I would say, yes, I was a little bit surprised sometimes that, that even the $10,000 was a little bit steep for some of the facilities. I think that we're all hopeful that the charity care goes down, and I think we're okay from a county perspective if as a part of this, they become HIPMC champions, which means that they then align their improvement plans with our county improvement plan, and we're really hoping that eventually that will lead to investment in improvement programs. So even if the investment isn't in the needs assessment, we're really hoping that as we bring them on, as we provide a service, as they align their improvement plans with our county improvement plan, that the investment will then fall on the programs side.
If I'm the IRS, I'm saying still, you know, two or three reimbursed admissions that used to be charity care more than pay for this. Mm-hmm. It just seems like they're getting more out of the Affordable Care Act than they're giving back.
Yeah, and they can actually charge this to their community benefit as well. So they don't have to absorb it as a cost anywhere else.
Vicki, am I alone in this kind of?
I just wanted to ask, so congratulations on a successful model and getting put that on everyone's radar. And the stakes are up for them, and I am quite confident that they'll need more than one epidemiologist.
So we had originally included that we would support helping them with their implementation plan as well as their monitoring. And when we initially wrote the proposal with that included in it, some of the facilities a little bit balked at that because they felt like then it wasn't just us assisting them with it, which is really the purview that we had taken on it, but rather it was the health department telling them what they have to do for their implementation plan. And so it's included as an optional feature within their contract for signing up to be a part of this collaborative. But in practicality, we've really found that none of the facilities know what they want to do for their implementation plan or how they want to implement their evaluations. And so we've really found that even though originally they had really felt strongly that they didn't want our assistance in that area, that really they do want our assistance in that area. So
I was just going to comment from an Oregon perspective. We're in the middle of implementing the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid expansion. We are implementing in Oregon what are called coordinated care organizations. So they're like the accountable care organizations, only a little different. But we have a requirement in those that they also do community health assessments, not just of enrolled population. And sort of back to what Vicki was saying, we actually, there's a line in there that you have to do it in conjunction with your local health department. So, you know, making the requirement, and it, there's two ways to it. I mean, I think there's the, when you were talking about mandatory versus, but, you know, if you sort of make it mandatory and then people start to see the benefit, that's another way out of it. But at least for us, this, you know, you were talking about alignment. It's a huge challenge because some of these aren't a 3-year schedule, a 5-year schedule of the hospital. You know, we also have our mental health is also, they need to be doing assessments. Again, it's a different focus than what we tend to think of a public health. But again, they're under our umbrella agencies. So when all of the same kind of local facilities are doing or health departments doing this, it's a huge challenge. So I commend your efforts. We're trying to do a similar thing, but it is very challenging.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, especially this first 3-year cycle has been definitely a challenge and a lot of extra work to try and get everyone's needs met, but also get a quality product out there. You know, so it's been this really this big struggle. I will say that one of the hospital systems that is in the partnership has a behavioral health funded activity, and they have a couple of insurance requirements that require them to do needs assessments. So we've been supporting those through this collaborative as well. And those have gone pretty well. I think, did you saw?
We're doing something out in Cook County, Illinois. We're doing something similar with the 6 health departments in Cook County. It's actually being led, co-led by the health, 6 health departments as well as the Illinois Public Health Institute. So one of our public health institutes is actually leading it. And so it kind of takes some of the burden off of that health department. The health departments are committed to kind of do in-kind data support for this process. But I just commend what you're doing. I just think the leadership structure is critical in terms of how you lead this in terms of, so the burden is not all about the department, and there's an ownership as well from the health systems. We didn't have a lot of hospitals coming to health departments. We have over 23 hospitals in my jurisdiction. Not all of them were engaging with the public health.
Yeah, and there's a couple of other models. I mean, unfortunately, we don't have a public health institute in Arizona. And then several other models like King County and some others have used their hospital association as the convening authority, and they then write in a requirement for these, and they act as the fiscal agent with the health department as a partner. And none of those options really were feasible within our jurisdiction, which is why we ended up with this. But I definitely think that there are a lot of good models that are starting to develop that have some of these other kind of collaborative partnerships. I've also seen some nonprofits that have been interested in being the convener of some of these, too.
And our fee structure is about the same as yours as well. Because if it was up too high, they
go off with one. So one last question.
Yeah, so the accreditation standards say at least every 5 years, and so we're just going to use the 3-year cycle and hopefully have everybody be on that same 3-year cycle.
So thanks, everyone. I want to thank all of our speakers.